a terrible Monday on the Monty Show. Hi, it's Monday, April 2nd.
Positive vibes.
No, none. None whatsoever. What an awful sports weekend for me. Chelsea knocked out of the Champions League next year. Not only did we lose to Spurs at Stamford Bridge for the first time ever, the Cubs lost to Miami and then today got it whooped in Cincinnati. Baseball season's over. I might as well move on to, like, something else.
The Cubs are terrible. Not going to the playoffs. We get it.
Yeah, maybe I should take up knitting. You can follow the show on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Make sure you find our new website, themontyshow.com, M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. But until all that destruction of sports, let's start by talking the National Basketball Association of playoff basketball. I say that because I thought it was another fascinating weekend. And I say it was fascinating because the bottom of the Western Conference, I think, is as compelling as I ever remember it being. And I want to start with the Oklahoma City Thunder because I think we are seeing the final days of Paul George in OKC. Do you believe that they make the playoffs?
I can't definitively say. I don't think they will. I don't believe they will. I think they're just so awkward. I think Russ and Paul George together is outstanding, you know, alongside Steven Adams.
Yeah.
But again, I think it's just really difficult to overcome the awkwardness and the bravado of Melo. I'm not saying it's killing them, but it really hurts them in certain situations. And I think, you know, not just at the end of the game, like in when they're running sets, when Melo's playing crappy defense, like there's all these situations where you would think you hear the name Melo and it would be like, yes, that's Melo. Like, he's a great scorer, really good contributor.
Yep.
That's not who he is. And I think Paul George is tired of not winning.
And I think one of the more difficult things is how much money Carmelo is making. He's getting $8 million more to come off the bench than Paul George. And he's got a player option for next year that he's certainly going to opt into because he's never going to make $20-plus million in this league if he doesn't.
Yeah.
And if they get Carmelo opting in and they re-sign Paul George, they're going to wind up paying $30 million in luxury tax next year. The writing's on the wall.
Yeah.
And the other interesting thing here is if they miss the playoffs, A, I think it's a done deal. I don't see how Paul George comes back. But I think this dynamic with the Lakers and Julius Randle and the fact that Julius Randle is playing great basketball, averaging almost 18 points and 10 rebounds a game. He is clearly their best option on most trips down the floor. They're leading the NBA in points in the paint because of Julius Randle. If you're LeBron James and you're Paul George, LeBron specifically is now playing with Larry Nance Jr., who has been quite a nice surprise for them
and
when
he's been
on the
nice
floor.
Piece, yeah.
Jordan Clarkson, who is what he is, but you understand that both those guys were well-coached in L.A., and now you're seeing this explosion out of Julius Randle. If you're LeBron James, Luke Walton looks a hell of a lot more compelling now than he did before that trade.
Yeah, and I think the interesting thing when it comes to LeBron James and his relationship with the head coach, it's everybody makes the joke that LeBron is the coach. And in a sense, he is, but I think the relationship between him and Ty Lue is that LeBron James runs that team and that's it. Because I think Ty Lue is more of a consultant than the head coach.
Sure. Yeah, right? I can see that.
But
yeah.
I think with Luke Walton, I think Luke Walton is much more of a strong-willed person. And I think there would be a even relationship there. I think Luke Walton would still command the respect of the team. LeBron James is the best player and he'll get his way. But I just think Luke Walton is a better fit. I don't think he's soft the way Ty Lue is.
I don't know if better fit is the word that I would use, but I think it's one of those things where Luke Walton is a get-along guy. He's a player's coach. Ty Lue is a guy who I think grinds hard. I think Luke Walton also is a lot more hipper. He's younger. He's won championships as a coach. A lot of people would argue that his Warriors team is the one that won a championship. He's turning out quality development. That's why I think he's more attractive to a guy like LeBron James and Paul George than Billy Donovan or Tyronn Lue or whoever you want to point to.
Yeah.
The Lakers are playing good basketball. They're not winning every night. They're losing games they should be winning, frankly. But I think they're in fairly decent shape.
Yeah. I mean, they're certainly in a great position to acquire those guys, acquire LeBron, acquire PG, and be in a great position to go on a run. And I think if you're LeBron James, you couldn't ask for much better, right? I mean, LeBron could very easily be in a position in his career where, I got probably, 5 years left, six years left max on my career.
Where you're at now, yeah.
Where he's at now. So if you're LeBron, you got to go somewhere where the pieces are in place for you to keep winning. And as you start to, turn down a little bit, and as your production starts to go down a little bit, those other guys around you have to pick it up so you still win. And I think the Lakers offer that.
Well, it'll certainly be interesting to watch. What happens to a Russell Westbrook? Let's say that OKC misses the playoffs. How much blame does Russell Westbrook get for that?
I guess it depends on how you view his style of play. I mean, everybody knows that Russell Westbrook is a on-the-ball guy, and he needs the ball to really be successful. But Westbrook is a superstar in this league, and so I think pretty much anybody you put around him, he'll have success with, except for Melo. And that's the weird thing.
No, except for KD. Seriously. Yeah. You can't give him a free pass on the KD thing.
Yeah. I mean, look, I don't think that's all Russ's fault, though. I mean, that's a good amount of it is Russ's fault. But I think KD also wanted to change the scenery. KD wanted to go out and win. And I think Russ is going to have to win soon. In the next 2-3 seasons to really cement his status as a great player in this league.
See, but I don't view him as a guy that is a championship caliber player. I think.
What do you think he is?
I think he's a very good player that doesn't want to share the basketball.
Yeah.
And if you don't want to share the basketball, Paul George is arguably the defensive player of the year right now. How much more would he be doing offensively if Russell Westbrook was not his teammate? If he was still in Indiana, how much more would he be doing? If he was on the Lakers, how much more productive would he be?
It's a fair question, and I think it's a question Paul George is asking himself. How much better would my numbers be if I was playing with LeBron and everybody else who were just cast members on our team, right? Yeah. Like, how much more of the ball would I see? Well, you'd see a hell of a lot more of the ball. LeBron can't play every minute of every game, and LeBron James is a passer, not a I guy, not a me guy. So I think Paul George would see a lot more of the ball. I think his numbers would go back up. I think he'd be right back in the conversation of best player in the league like he was when before the broken leg.
Yeah.
And I think for him, it's the right move. It is absolutely the right thing to do. It's not as though he's going to a team that the way KD did or the way LeBron did going to Miami. This is just the right decision.
I think it's really interesting that his numbers are all behind Russell Westbrook. I certainly think that's something of note. But I think they're one of the great train wrecks in the NBA right now.
Well,
I'm rooting for them to be. But
I totally agree. I think the expectation was that, the first 20 games of the year together, they were going to have to figure it out. And so whatever happened in the first 20, okay, we get it. The rest of the year, though, they were supposed to be a powerhouse. We were talking about them being top of the West.
Absolutely.
And it just hasn't worked out.
And I also kind of tend to believe that loss that the Jazz took to Boston, where Jaylen Brown hit that game winner, boy, that could really come back to roost, because they're right now a half game, the Jazz are a half game behind OKC for that fifth spot in the West. And they really, man, if they had won that Boston game, they'd be tied with the Spurs for fourth.
Mm-hmm.
And you're in a different situation. You're three games clear with five to play, and I feel like that's pretty safe.
Yeah.
Now you're two games clear with five to play, and I feel like that's a completely different deal. And if you look at where the Jazz are and what they have left, you got a couple of games with a real pesky Laker team that on some levels is a rival of yours. You're much better than them, and you've been much better than the Lakers the last several years. But you've also got a game at Portland. You've got the Clippers and Golden State. And that's an incredibly difficult ask for this team, I feel like.
Yeah, there's a lot of big names on the last five games of the schedule. There's no question about that. But I think, again, This goes back to they just need to be mentally tough and play their brand of basketball, which is suffocate people defensively and get out in transition, get those easy buckets. The reason you lost the Celtic game is because you played slow basketball. You didn't make shots either. And so both of those combined, you know, mean a loss on a late three-point shot right before the game ends.
Yeah.
And really in heartbreaking fashion. They knew they should have won that game. Jaylen Brown knows the Celtics shouldn't have won that game, yeah. Yet the Celtics won the game.
Well, it was at the end of the game, the Jaylen Brown plays a poor defensive rotation, but you can't shoot that poorly. And this is the one thing that concerns me about the Jazz. They rely on the three ball a lot. And that makes me a little nervous. I mean, Dante Exum's, you know, going to set a record for threes by a rookie. You know, Joe Ingles, we've seen that in a couple. That Atlanta game comes to mind where Jingles misses two threes late.
Yeah.
When you rely on the three, a lot of times you die by the three.
Yes.
It makes people's lives difficult when you're making it. But I really, really would love to see Rudy Gobert develop a little bit more of an offensive presence.
They could really use it.
If he could become an offensive weapon, even if he's just turns himself into a really good passer, I think it changes the way they're able to play. Derek Favors, you're probably changing that slot out. I wonder what they do there. But my feeling is very strongly that they need a little more offense out of Rudy. The defense is elite. The running the floor, the tenacious, competitive spirit that he has, like everything about Rudy Gobert is great. If he could pick up his offense a little bit, that would change things. The injection of energy from Dante Exum has been fantastic. And if the Jazz can get that from Dante Exum for these last couple of weeks of the season, last 10 days of the season, I guess it is, they're going to make the playoffs. But right now, I would not consider the Jazz safe, not with three against the Lakers and Clippers, and then two more against Golden State in a really, really difficult place to go and play in Portland. I think you're asking a lot to end the season in Portland with a win. If it comes down to that, you're in real trouble.
That cannot be a must-win game for you. Like, you cannot get there and be in a position where you have to beat Lillard and McCollum to get into the playoffs. You can't be in that position.
You have to sweep the three LA games.
Yeah.
You got to sweep two from the Lakers and one from the Clippers.
Yeah.
And again, I'm telling you, you're going to LA next Sunday. That's a really difficult place to beat the Lakers. Staples Center is no longer a push. These two games that you have coming up, the Lakers on Tuesday, the Clippers on Thursday, those are both at home. I think those are must-win games for them.
Yeah, and I think anytime teams, NBA teams specifically, find themselves in that situation, and it's rare because a lot of teams like are not in the position where the Lakers and Clippers are sharing an arena. But when you play two teams that are both in LA and you don't have to travel between games, that'll really help them. They'll be able to.
No, the two are in Salt Lake City.
Oh, well, then that's even better.
The two are in Salt Lake City and one against the Lakers at Staples Center.
Well, that's even better then. I mean, if you got both of those in Salt Lake, you should win those games. I mean, anytime you're playing in that at home in that arena, you should win, man.
How do you explain what Denver's doing? I mean, they're getting a superhuman performance from Jokic to win Milwaukee game, I guess it was, where he kind of went crazy. It was an overtime game. But you've got Indiana, Minnesota, then you're at the Lakers, Portland, then you're at Minnesota.
Yeah.
I mean, they're a real threat because they can win at home. They can beat anybody at home.
Well, that's the thing. They're capable of beating really good teams. The problem is that they too often don't execute, and too often Jokic finds himself in awkward positions where, you know, he ends up turning the ball over on a difficult pass that he shouldn't be making, or, you know, they make silly mistakes like that, and that inevitably costs them games. But on the flip side of that, they are a young team who has a ton of energy, and when they find a team that's on a back-to-back, look out, because the Nuggets are not a great team. They just happen to be a really young team with a lot of energy who's not tired. And that can be trouble.
Well, that's deadly.
I mean, that can be real trouble. And then you add in the fact that Jokic is giving you a superhuman performance. I mean,
he's really good.
What else are you supposed to say? You know?
I'm telling you that Mike Malone is holding that team back. They're not. He is not, as a coach, figured out how to use his talent the best way. And I think that's a real talking point. But between, like, New Orleans. How did New Orleans lose four in a row?
Don't know. And I totally agree with you. you know, you can't lose four in a row when you have Anthony Davis. That just shouldn't happen.
Yeah, I wrote on the website today, themontyshow.com, M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com, that any team that's got Anthony Davis cannot lose four in a row.
Yeah.
It simply can't happen. They're finding a way to do that.
Would you say that any team that has one superstar caliber player, be it an Anthony Davis, a LeBron, a James Harden, shouldn't lose four in a row?
Boy, I'd like to say that, but I don't think that's accurate. I really don't.
And I think a lot of what goes into that conversation is what you were getting at earlier with the Jazz and their reliance on the three ball. You can point to a dozen teams who just rely on the three ball. The Warriors, the Rockets, yep, the Jazz. Now, the Pelicans are not one of those teams. The Pelicans actually play a pretty, all-around scoring game.
Yeah.
Because they have a big man who, you know, plays like a point guard, essentially.
But he's dynamic enough that you really should be able to use him in a variety of ways where you can build off of that, where he makes everybody on the floor with him better. And the thing I'm struggling with is I don't understand how they just fall flat so consistently and so unexplainably that they are unable to recover from that a lot of times.
Yeah.
And that's what's plaguing the bottom of the Western Conference right now. Because there is, I don't think, what's the right way to say this? Is there a mediocre team at the bottom of the Western Conference? Yeah, probably. Is New Orleans mediocre, a game up on Denver? I don't think they're mediocre. Is Minnesota mediocre? I don't think so.
Well, on paper, they're not mediocre. But as a team and playing a team brand of basketball, they've been mediocre. Thus, they're at the bottom of the conference playoff picture. You know, teams that are good and locked up and playing a great brand of basketball are teams like the Rockets. Look at the Rockets' setup, right?
Yeah.
So you have James Harden, you have CP3.
Right.
Two superstars. You know, James Harden is allegedly the best player in the league. CP3 is still an all-star every year, and by some people's opinions, a superstar.
I would say James Harden's the best scorer in the league.
Okay, great. Best scorer in the league. Better at scoring the basketball than anybody else in the league. You have more than enough talent to win every single night and go undefeated if you were to play it the right way. We all know that's never going to happen because there's too much that goes into this. James Harden will get tired at some point.
Yeah.
So that's why you need guys like Gerald Green to come off the bench and give you 15 in 10 minutes, you know, with the three ball and just light it up and infuse that energy. And so when we talk about the Pelicans don't have a guy like that. In my opinion, Anthony Davis can give you 56 a night and you're still not going to win.
Yeah, because Etuan Moore, this is the DeMarcus Cousins injury. I mean, that very clearly is what this is. But Etuan Moore, Drew Holiday, it's awfully difficult to look at those guys and think, oh, yeah, we're going to be fine.
Yeah.
But the problem is not even that they're losing. It's who they're losing to. They're consistently losing to the top teams they play. This four-game losing streak is the Rockets, Blazers, Cavs, and Thunder. So four good teams. There's four
playoff
teams. Four
of the best teams in the league.
But they're losing by 5 points.
Yeah.
They're losing by 5 at home to the Thunder, by 5 on the road to the Cavs, by 4 at home to the Blazers, getting blown out in Houston.
Well, what does that say to you? To me, that says they're missing a lot of free throws and they're not rebounding the ball. When you lose by 4 or 5 a game, you miss too many free throws or you just didn't get to the line enough. That's what that says to me.
And I think they're not defending well enough. That's what the real issue is. I mean, because you're never probably, I shouldn't say never, you're rarely going to out-rebound New Orleans. But what happens is, they make 4 3-pointers. They go 4 for 24 in that Blazer game.
Yeah.
You're not going to win shooting 16% from three.
Well, and we talked about this with, you know, the Jazz against in their run of, you know, mediocrity that we've seen. I mean, and that's what I'm saying. There are so many teams that rely on the three ball or rely on jump shooting to win them games.
Absolutely.
So when you're not shooting, whether it's from three or, two, when you're not shooting well, you're in real trouble. If you can't play elite defense the way the Jazz can, you're in real trouble. You know, and so that's why I say teams like the Rockets, you better make all your shots in the playoffs. They have all year, so I would expect them to, but you never know. You could have an off night, and maybe that leads to you losing your home court advantage. Who knows?
Well, it'll be interesting to see. All I know is that when you're getting 36 and 14 from Anthony Davis, you can't lose those games.
Yeah.
Because what that tells you is he's a man on an island and you're not defending. That's what that tells me. But again, just taking your temperature here, Monday, April 2nd, just taking your temperature. Who's going to win the NBA championship? Because now, for the first time, the Rockets have pulled even in Vegas with the Warriors to as favorites to win the championship.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I'm still going to take the Warriors, but I think the Rockets are...
Well, what's it going to take?
Well, it's going to take the Rockets beating the Warriors. It's going to take them...
So you'll never take Houston?
I'll never take Houston until they show me that they can beat the Warriors in a seven-game series. Beating a team on any given night is one thing. But remember what we're talking about in the playoffs. You're talking about going to Oracle several times.
Roracle, please.
And beating that team. And then you're talking about over seven games owning them in four of those games.
Yeah.
That's a big ask of any
team. It's a huge ask.
I'm not saying they're not capable of it. And I would even go as far as to say I could see it happening this year just because of where the Warriors are at. With the KD saga, Curry's injury, Klay Thompson's injury. It just hasn't been a great year for the Warriors.
Yet
they're still right there in the mix. So they're dangerous.
I'm going to take the Rockets. I just think the Rockets are playing too well. Knock on wood, they're healthy. And really, KD's meltdown, Steph's inability to be on the floor.
And his inability, frankly, to show up in the playoffs.
Well, it's not that he doesn't show up in the playoffs. He doesn't show up in the biggest moments. When they're struggling for a moment, when they're struggling for something, Steph is not there to give that to them.
Yeah.
And I'm curious to see James Harden in a Western Conference Finals. I'm curious to see Trevor Ariza and Chris Paul.
But see, Trevor Ariza is going to be there the whole time because he's been there and done that already. He got all his playoff experience with
That's a lot
Kobe.
Of confidence.
Well, but he's been there already. He's been through playoffs.
Not with this group he hasn't been.
Well, not specifically with this group, but what I'm saying is when you talk about guys who are going to come up big in the playoffs, Trevor Ariza will be one of those guys because he's not worried. The moment is not too big for him. So
yeah, I'm with you on that.
You can count on him.
I think it will come down to who's going to make the most threes. Because typically, and we talk about this all the time, I know, but typically in the playoffs, it turns into a half-court game. That's not what you're going to see. I don't think. I think in a Rockets-Warriors series,
yeah.
I think that would be an up and down. I think it'd be a slugfest from the three-point line. And the only reason I hesitate with the Rockets is because I think Golden State's a really good rebounding team. All their guards rebound, Steph rebounds, Klay rebounds. And it'll be, by the way, how much rust should you expect from Klay Thompson? Because I think there's a chance with as long as he's been out with this thumb, and I think there's a chance that Klay Thompson is a little rusty.
Yeah.
And you'd love to see him back this week. And they've been talking about, hey, he was supposed to be here and now there. And you'd love to see him back this week.
Yeah.
I'm curious what he looks like when he does come back. Because they really are going to need him to be firing on all cylinders.
Yeah, I mean, I would hope it's very similar, if not the same, to Kevin Love's return. I would hope that Klay Thompson could just step right back in and start making shots again. But again, Klay Thompson is a volume three-point shooter, whereas Kevin Love is a opportunistic three-point shooter.
Yeah, I would agree with that. Find us on Twitter, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. All right, let's panic. Cubs lost again today, and it's way too early to panic. I get it. But this is the same team this year as last year.
Mm-hmm.
And it's week one in the season. Yu Darvish did not pitch well. Did not pitch well at all.
Well, start from the beginning.
And
John Lester didn't pitch well. Then Yu Darvish didn't pitch well.
Yeah. And you split a series in Miami with the Marlins. You got shut out yesterday. You scored one run in your second game. Now today you go to Cincinnati against a really crappy baseball team in the Reds. You got shut out 1-0. You got good pitching and zero hitting.
Yeah.
And it's Kyle Schwarber striking out in the ninth on a ball a foot outside and in the dirt. Like, what is going on with this team?
Well, and I think, you know, to be honest, the bigger situation is the Rizzo situation where he's got bases loaded, two outs, he's 1-2, and he strikes out on a fastball out of the zone.
Above the letters.
Above the letters, yeah. Outside, you know, and he reached for it and he chased. And so, for me... those are the situations. I mean, the Marlins series, I can't remember which game it was. They left 10 guys on base, and you got shut out. It was the game where they lost 6-0. Like, you can't leave that many guys on base and
have
any expectation that you're going to win a ball game. And then today, you just straight up don't show up. So, for this team, you're going to have to hit. And I agree with you. Addison Russell has got to start coming through. He's got to start producing. And you know Rizzo and Bryant are going to be there for you. They may not have been there today, but they're going to be there the majority of the year for you. Yeah. You can just count on that. But it's guys like Schwarber, guys like Russell, guys like Ian Happ that have to produce.
Yeah, well, their only hits came out of Javi Baez and Ian Happ today. That was it.
Yeah, you know.
They got two hits the entire game. And sadly and frustratingly, Chatwood gives you 6 innings, 4 hits, and earned runs, 6 walks, 4 Ks.
49 strikes on 92 pitches. Yeah. It needs to be better than that, you know. But again,
gave up one run.
Again, one run. You should have won the game. You should have been able to score 3, 4, if not 5 runs on that team. What happened today? The Reds starting pitcher dominated you with his fastball. Just dominated you. Low in the zone, movement and control.
They lost 2-0, 13-7, and 6-5 to the Nationals.
Yeah.
And the Cubs go in there and drop a stinker 1-0 to the Reds. Saying that you're worried about this Cubs team 5 games into the year is a bit presumptuous.
Yeah.
But you're starting to see the same trend emerge again and again and again. You're leaving a crap ton of guys on base. You're leaving a crap ton of guys in scoring position.
Yeah.
You're not getting quality starts from your pitchers. That is what is so troubling about this Cubs team. And you can look at the LA Dodgers, who we talk about a lot. The Dodgers were supposedly weak on the pitching mound, right? They play a 4-game series and give up exactly 2 runs to the San Francisco Giants. Now, maybe it's just a reverse trend. Maybe they got a great start out of Rich Hill last night, surprisingly. Or maybe their pitching's better than we thought it was, 1 start into the season.
Yeah.
You know,
last year we covered the Diamondbacks and we saw a lot of the Dodgers in playing the Diamondbacks in person. Rich Hill is a guy that is a true soft tossing lefty. The guy throws 85 miles an hour on his fastball, and he's like 76 on his big, sweeping, loopy curveball. Look, the Giants had a lot of trouble with that curveball. They just couldn't get to it. Brandon Belt is not going to be the guy everybody wanted him to be, in my opinion. Defensively, outstanding. Rock solid. As a hitter, he's not going to be that. He's never going to be the Goldschmidts of the world or any kind of huge power guy.
He's going to hit 280, 290, and he's going to give you 20 bombs.
Yeah, you know, so, but again,
hopefully,
against guys like Rich Hill, he really struggles. And I don't understand that, because you just got to get that fastball and you got to adjust. That's it. It's not like he's blowing you away, right? Yeah. So I just think it was a good series between the Giants and the Dodgers. I think the Giants need to adjust. The guys in the middle have got to hit better. You can't go, what was it, 2-for-42 out of McCutcheon, Longoria, and what was it, Posey, right?
No. You can't go 2-for-42 out of McCutcheon, Longoria, and Jackson.
And Jackson, yeah.
2-for-42, and Longoria still doesn't have a hit.
Yeah. And by the way, he made an error in that series, too.
Yeah.
And one that was easy ground ball. So, I don't know. Are we seeing growing pains? Are we seeing breaking in the gloves?
Seeing Yu Darvish saying that his arm cramped, and then they said, okay, we're taking it out? And he goes, no, it almost cramped. It didn't cramp. Like, Yu Darvish being weird. Like,
that's what I'm saying, though. Those are the kind of quirks of Japanese pitchers like that. They have the because of their mechanics and because of the torque they put on their arm, they're going to have quirks like that. You know,
is it the Arizona teams that are going to struggle? Because, and this is every year, we talk about the fact that the Arizona teams, they can't go north and east. So what do? They go south. So you have the Cubs going into Florida playing the Marlins. And Yu Darvish said, hey, every year I struggle. And where was he before this? He was with Texas.
Yeah.
And they're in Arizona. And he says he's dehydrated and changing the climate completely. And I don't know. Maybe I buy into that a little bit. Maybe I do. I have no idea what's wrong with some of these guys.
I got to tell you, even if it's true, it's at best it's an excuse, right? Because you're a professional athlete. You need to be able to compensate for those things. And again, I'm not trying to be harsh or crack the whip on these guys, but you're a professional athlete. You should be able to handle that.
You'd think so.
And Yu Darvish is not some rookie. I mean, the guy is established in the league now.
He should be able to handle that. Best team in the NL West.
I mean, it's the Dodgers right now, but I think it's very close. Dodger fans would tell you they're far and away better. I don't think they're far and away better. I think the Giants got surprisingly good starts out of their young
Stratton
guys.
Stratton and Block were
really good. Cueto was good, so I don't know. I think it's going to be a tight race. I think the Padres are going to make a lot of noise, under the radar, but it's the Dodgers still. Until they're dethroned, it's the Dodgers.
Yeah, I'll be interested to see what I really actually like, by the way, what Arizona's doing.
Yeah.
They DFA'd Yasmani Tomas. He cleared waivers. They sent him to Reno. They told him, hey, find a position you can play and go play it, and we might recall you. I love that because that's exactly what needed to happen. And they're actually playing decent baseball. This division's going to be nip and tuck. And I know, again, I guess I will be the lone guy that's going to espouse about the Padres because they haven't won a game yet. And it annoyed me they were off on Easter yesterday. But I get it. You're not going to draw in San Diego on Easter. I understand it. But I think they're going to be pesky all year long. And I think what we've seen out of guys like Margot, I think that's a big deal because I think Margot is a guy that could be really special for them. But they're going to get great performances out of Hedges. We're starting to see Eric Hosmer hitting. They lost three really difficult games to the Brewers. But now tonight they're going to get Colorado. And I think Colorado offers them an opportunity to bounce back.
But isn't that an even series talent-wise? Like pitching, neither team has great pitching, right? The Rockies, John Gray's not their ace or not the ace they thought he would be, let's say. So I think they're very even pitching-wise, but hitting is really going to be the key factor for me because I feel like for the Padres, the Rockies are a good test offensively to measure yourself. They have a lot of pop. I would agree with that. And the Padres have added pop. So I'll be curious to see who puts up better numbers.
The Rockies just cannot pitch. I think we saw that very clearly that against the Diamondbacks, their pitching's terrible. And until they figure that out, I think they're really going to struggle. So that'll be interesting. Before we get to my beloved Chelsea Football Club, and I should just put it off as long as I can. But
put it off.
Did you see Bryce Harper?
Oh, yes.
So Bryce Harper hits two home runs yesterday, and this is on my website, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. You want to read about my thoughts on Chelsea, it's there as well. M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show. Bryce Harper comes up in Cincinnati yesterday and hit a moon ball in the sixth. I mean, a ball that probably still has not landed. So he comes up in the ninth, and he's in the box, and he's waiting for the pitch, and you hear somebody in the background yell, "Overrated!"
Like clear as day.
About 2 seconds later, the pitch is thrown, and the ball goes 400 feet. And Harper just trots around the bases.
He pimped that thing so good.
I mean, Bryce Harper is a guy I love watching hit home runs. And one of the things I wrote on the website today is that there are not a lot of guys right now that are just great home run hitters. And I know a lot of people will pick Judge and Stanton as the guys they like to watch hit home runs. I am much more the Joey Gallo, certainly Bryce Harper, and Anthony Rizzo. I love the way those guys approach the ball. I like that Gallo swings with everything he's got every time and hopes that he gets the launch angle right. I love that. I love that Anthony Rizzo is much more of a tactician at the plate. He'll choke up on the bat. Two strikes, he is not scared to slap the ball the other way.
I mean, Rizzo is just, in every category, professional hitter. I mean, the guy is just a professional.
I would agree. But I love watching him hit.
I got to tell you, I don't know that there's a better hitter to watch hit a home run, like a moonshot home run than Kyle Schwarber. I mean, when he swings and connects, it is amazing.
He's not a professional hitter, though, and it's frustrating. He swings at some balls that just leave you scratching your head. But when he connects, and he hit a couple in Miami, when he connects, man.
We'll see ya.
It's a beautiful thing. One guy to watch hit home runs.
It's probably Bryce.
Yeah, how's it not Bryce Harper?
Because so when we have this conversation, the thing I compare most is, you know, like Ken Griffey Jr. was always regarded as having like the most beautiful swing, a pretty swing.
Yep.
Bryce Harper has a pretty swing. Rizzo, in my opinion, has a nice finish, but not a pretty swing. It's a very calculated swing.
Yes.
Harper just swings the hell out of the bat, and when he connects, it's not coming back. And then, because he's Bryce Harper, and because he knows he's going to get massive money,
correct,
he just pimps it around the bases, right? Like, and essentially,
because he can.
He didn't, but essentially he's flipping the bird to whoever said overrated in the background before the pitch.
Yeah.
And it's just that portion of hitting a home run is what I think a lot of guys miss. Like Stanton, I love watching Stanton hit a home run because it's just so much power. Like, he line drives home runs. Like, it's ridiculous. You just don't like Stanton because he's a Yankee and because you think he takes steroids.
I don't think that Mike call me Giancarlo Stanton is straight out of the womb like that. I don't think that Aaron Judge is straight out of the womb like that. I didn't think Alex Rodriguez was straight out of the womb like that. Now, there are guys who are just athletic freaks of nature. I'm good with that. I get it. But I don't know anything. It's just my opinion that Giancarlo Stanton has to be doing something. Look at Bryce Harper. Is Bryce a behemoth like that? No, he has excellent plate mechanics. Excellent. He's worked on it. Giancarlo Stanton stands up there, closes himself off, and drives the ball to right field. Okay. Hey, maybe that's your thing.
It is.
That is a big dude with huge, huge biceps.
Like Thames in Milwaukee. A dude who's on it.
Come on. In my opinion, Thames is on it too. Again, I'm not saying that there's facts or evidence. I'm saying in my opinion.
He doesn't pass the eye test.
No, he doesn't. Not close. Neither does Antonio Conte at Chelsea.
Here we go. Everybody, I just want you to know the next 5 minutes are going to be a little rough, but we're going to get past that, and then the show's going to end well.
It's probably more than 5 minutes. So I am an unapologetic Chelsea football supporter. You know that if you've listened to this show. You know that if you watch this show on Periscope. You see that we have a huge Chelsea banner. You know that I've been to the UK multiple times. I love Chelsea Football Club, and it's heartbreaking to watch this football club and this team perform the way they're performing now, because yesterday at the Bridge, we got embarrassed, and Antonio Conte, as much as I love and respect Antonio, and sadly, I think he's right, by the way, because yesterday he said so for the first time, I think we saw Antonio Conte lose his composure. He punted a water bottle yesterday on the touchline, probably 15 yards. And we've never seen that.
Into the field or into the stands?
Just down the touchline. We've never seen him do that. And it was after the second Delhi goal. Because they're just stupid goals.
Pathetic
like stupid
goals.
Opportunities. Yeah. Inexperienced opportunities out of Christensen. Like, what are you looking at? And Dele Alli is a quality striker. He's a guy that he scores a lot of goals, but he's been a massive disappointment. Massive disappointment this year. Yet he comes into Stamford Bridge and knocks home a double. And just tears us up, and now there's no chance we qualify for Champions League football next year. There's no chance. And now, as clearly as it's been at any point in this campaign, Conte's out. If you had beaten Spurs and you were on the road to qualification for Champions League, okay, with a year and $9 million left on the contract, maybe we could look at this, maybe we could talk about this, but there's no looking or talking. Antonio Conte is out at Chelsea Football Club. I think we've known that for some time, but something like yesterday just cements that.
You mean an embarrassment?
No, just that performance, and very clearly, the club didn't have an answer for what Spurs brought to the park yesterday. Like, you just didn't have an answer. You've bought terrible talent. Morata is a complete flop at Chelsea.
Yeah.
He scores a goal yesterday, and thankfully they lobbed a ball up and he was able to head it home. That's all he can do. How a guy like Alvaro Morata cannot play with his feet in front of goal, I have no explanation for it. How a guy like Cesc Fabregas is your best option against a Spurs team that dominated, I have no idea. I look at guys like Kevin De Bruyne, who today said he's the player of the year, should still be wearing the right shade of blue instead of that, you know, terrible blue at City. But he's not. I look at Diego Costa, 100%. Why is he not at Chelsea Football Club? Because Antonio Conte didn't want him here. That's why he's not at Chelsea Football Club anymore. It's a huge mistake. This team has wasted money on the Zappa Costas of the world, the Bakayokos of the world, the Rudigers of the world. You still haven't replaced John Terry. You have loaned out a ton of talent. Tammy Abraham comes to mind. Zuma comes to mind. Like, I could go on and on. This football club is broken right now. And thankfully, it's not broken and in 10th place. Thankfully, it's broken and right now you're in 5th place. Thankfully. I think I consider that lucky. Because Hazard has become a very pedestrian player now. I look at, you know, like Victor Moses is a perfect example. Victor Moses should not be playing at a club the level of Chelsea. Like, he's not at that level. He does not contribute on a regular basis. He gives you flashes of the spectacular. You look across the formation to Alonso. He's just good enough. He's a tremendous free kick taker. He's a tremendous, in my opinion, he's a great, great winger. But we need somebody who can legitimately be a box-to-box midfielder. Our biggest problem, I think, one is we don't have a big physical striker. We don't have a Diego Costa, and the candidates are...
Well, I don't even think it's about having a big striker. I think it's about having a qualified striker on any level. They can get in position to put the ball in. There's nobody to go to who they trust, and that's a problem.
Yeah, yes, but I also think that the problem is that Conte is alone in midfield, right? Like, I mean, he's the only guy doing the job in the midfield. Where the fuck is Ross Barkley? Somebody explain that to me. Like, this was supposed to be the guy that we, you know, we're buying this guy from Everton, and this is the guy that's going to come in. He's playing developmental football for us right now. Like, what happened to Ross Barkley? Help me understand how are you really telling me that Bakayoko is a better option for this club than Ross Barkley right now? How's that possible? I just don't understand it. And now the season's over. Like, you can just write it off. Because whether you finish ninth or sixth, it doesn't matter. Nobody's going to write a remarkable script about how Chelsea, well, they are amazingly... Nobody wants to play Europa League. Who wants to play Thursday, Sunday games? Like, who thinks Thursday, Sunday Europa football is great? Not me. I'd rather have the Thursday off, to be honest with you. And great, if you win the Europa League, you qualify. Well, I'll qualify through finishing top four in the best league in the world. Because that's what we should be doing. I should probably stop. But it's incredibly frustrating. It is to watch this club just fall apart and just eat each other alive. Like, the Ross Barkley thing's really frustrating. Like, where, somebody explain to me where Ross Barkley is. How is he playing?
I mean, it doesn't matter, you know, where he is. Explain how, at the end of the day, explain how you've wasted money on all this talent that's not contributing, and then you've loaned out all this quality talent that could be contributing. And I think that's the biggest thing. You know, you've
loaned out and sold
so many players. I mean, Diego Costa is exactly who you need, and
that was a personality conflict. Yeah,
he's not here.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I don't know how you explain it. I don't even know how you fix it.
There's no explaining it. You finish the season, you play average football next year, and you try to win the league.
Yeah. Well, there you go. There's my Chelsea rant for the day. I don't feel better. I don't. Have you ever snorted a condom?
No. No.
What is wrong with people?
Hey, and I don't want millennials taking blame for this because it's not millennials.
Okay, well, you guys were busy eating Tide Pods.
Not millennials either. Not millennials either. Nope.
We went from eating Tide Pods to snorting condoms. Like, I
hold on. We went from millennials as kids went from eating cookie dough that was uncooked and was allegedly going to kill us to now eating Tide Pods in the next generation. How does that happen?
Bad parenting?
Apparently. Apparently.
So this is a thing now. And you can, again, this is in the odds and ends on my blog today, themontyshow.com. M-O-N-T-Y, themontyshow.com. Kids now, and really this isn't new. This happened 2 years ago, and now it's coming back for some reason. Kids are taking unused condoms, taking them out of the wrapper, stretching them out, snorting them through one nostril, and pulling them out their mouth. Why would you do this?
Why? Why? Help me.
I completely do not understand this.
I don't get it either. Why is that cool?
I would never think to snort a condom. I just wouldn't think to do that.
Mainly because you'd be too busy doing other things, but that's besides
the point. I would be doing other things with the condom. But I would not be snorting a condom. I would not be eating Tide Pods.
Have you ever snorted anything?
No.
Me either.
Honestly, I haven't. Like we joke, I'm a complete noob. I haven't smoked weed, never snorted. Like watching The Wolf of Wall Street? No. Oh. Never done coke off a hooker's cleavage. Haven't done that either. I know I need to live a little bit, but I haven't done that either. I'm 45. How did I make it this far without snorting cocaine off of a prostitute?
Cocaine.
I have no idea. But I this whole thing is just mind-numbing. Like, how is that even happening?
Lack of supervision, maybe. Too many resources for kids these days to get after. Like, I don't know. I don't know.
What's happening is kids are snorting condoms and choking on them.
And dying.
Okay. Well, did you not think you could maybe choke to death on that condom?
Disgusting. I mean, it just... There's literally zero explanation for it. Like, none. Like, this is the same thing as the Tide Pod. There is no explanation for it. Why? What in your head said that was a good idea?
Yeah, I don't know. Hey, by the way, there was another Russian poisoning many years ago now that has come out.
Dude, the Russians are doing work.
Dude, the poisoning thing is crazy. I don't know how many people watch Homeland on Showtime. Poisoning's been a big kind of thread run through their show this year. And again, there was a poisoning incident. I won't give any spoilers or anything, but there was a poisoning incident on Homeland last night. So this morning, I read an article about some guy named Viktor Yushchenko, Ukraine's ex-president.
Oh.
Who was running for president against one of Vladimir Putin's hand-picked guys. So they poisoned him. And it, like, essentially melted his face. It's wait until you see the picture. And again, find
Gnar.
It. You can find it on my Twitter feed, The Monty Show, M-O-N-T-Y, The Monty Show, or online at themontyshow.com. But... yeah, I why would you do anything against Vladimir Putin? Because he's shown that he's not a guy that makes hollow threats.
He don't play.
Yeah, I don't understand it. I really don't. Finally, Tesla could be in big trouble. Would you ever buy a Tesla?
No.
Because? Nope.
Too much of a car enthusiast. Need that motor sound. Can't do electric.
So you would never do electric?
No.
Okay. Well, they're comparing Tesla to the DeLorean company. Who built only 9,080 cars before it collapsed in the 80s. The problem is that's about as many as Tesla sold last month. The problem is they can't keep up with demand, and their stock plunged 23% in the last 2 weeks. The last day of active trading, it was at $266.13 when it had been at $389.61.
Pretty steep drop.
I think Tesla's in real, real trouble. The Model 3 is way behind. Way behind.
Well, and they're having trouble producing cars. And, yeah. And I think a lot of this goes to, you know, Elon Musk has always been an innovator of sorts. He's always been the guy who's making the coolest rocket or making Teslas or anything like that. So his whole point here is that I'm going to revolutionize the production line system for cars. And what he really means is I'm taking the human element out of it and making it all robotic. So we can build cars faster. We can build them more efficiently. By the way, we save all the overhead. So this is not a friendly model to the Fords and the GMs of the world. The unions, you know.
But it's failing miserably.
Right now it is. And he's going to have to figure out how to change that and how to make it productive. I think they are in trouble. But if there's anyone who can figure it out, it's Elon Musk. This is not as though this is his first time being in trouble.
Yeah, it'll be interesting to watch. I don't know if Tesla ever makes it out. It'll be interesting to see if they do. But hey, you know what? Good on Elon Musk, because he's got rockets going into space too, by the way.
Yeah.
He's doing really well at that. He just can't make cars. Hey, make sure you find us online, The Monty Show on Twitter, MONTY, The Monty Show on Twitter. Make sure you find the website, themontyshow.com. And of course, you can get our daily podcast at SoundCloud and on iTunes. You know what it is. It's The Monty Show. MONTY, themontyshow.com. Say goodbye, Jake.
Goodbye, Jake.